This is the FYI on Youth Ministry, where the FYI team brings you, of course, groundbreaking research, but also ideas and stories that you can put into practice in your youth ministry. In this episode, we're talking about purpose. What do teenagers have to say about that? Well, we asked four teenagers, and here's what they told us. When you think about purpose, what comes to mind?
That's a good question. Let me think for a minute.
That one's really tricky.
Sorry, can you define purpose in this context?
I feel like your purpose is like what you're meant to do in life. I don't know, that doesn't sound good. It sounds like your purpose is like premeditated. But maybe it is, I don't know.
What are we meant to do? What's the meaning of life if we're just gonna die eventually?
And then obviously like there's purpose with like God and like trying to like live in his image and that purpose too. But then also like, I guess the purpose of like what you're supposed to do, like your job is also like in the forefront of my mind too. And I don't know, so I don't know what my purpose is.
Hello everyone, my name is Jennifer Guerra Aldana.
And I am Giovanni Sunraps Pengenda.
Gio, once again, so happy to be co-hosting with you.
I'm so happy to be co-hosting with you too.
If you can't tell, there's lots of excitement for today's conversation. And I think it has a lot to do with who we get to talk to today.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Our guest today is Reverend Dr. Almeda Wright, and she is the Associate Professor of Religious Education at Yale Divinity School, where she does research and focuses on adolescent spiritual development, African-American religion, and the intersections of religion and public life. And her latest book, which we are big fans of here at FYI, mm-hmm. is titled The Spiritual Lives of Young African Americans.
This season, we are talking about the three big questions that change every teenager. And today, Almeda is with us to talk about the question of purpose.
Whoa.
Yeah. Almeda was an advisor throughout the research, and we even got to borrow some of the questions from her own research protocol with students. So her insights were invaluable all along the way. So thank you, Almeda, for being here. We're so excited for this conversation.
Thank you guys for having me. And I'm excited to have been able to share with that stuff and to be able to have a conversation about purpose in young people's lives today.
I'd actually like to start with a somewhat personal question, because your own trajectory is a bit meaningful, especially in the terms of purpose, because your first degree is from MIT in electrical engineering.
Yeah.
And then the work you are doing now is completely different from that, right?
Or is it though? Young people engineering.
Can you tell us a little bit about your own purpose journey?
Well, it's very interesting. And I love, you know, talking about my experiences as an engineer and thinking about that, because that was a purpose that I saw for myself, that my family and my teachers spoke into me to become an electrical engineer since I was probably about 3 or 4, because I like to tinker with things. And so I was pretty good in math and science. And if you have that kind of trajectory, people say, well, you should be an engineer. For me, even thinking about it, I learned so much about myself by being able to listen to my community, to feel affirmed by the things and the gifts that they saw in me, to help me think about what I might be able to do. Because I was a little girl from rural Virginia. Who ever thought about, like, you know, going? I didn't even actually know, by the way, where MIT was. I wasn't sure if it was in Michigan or if it was in Minnesota or anywhere. I did find out by the time I got to high school that it was in Massachusetts. But constantly for me, when I think about my journey, I think about the gift of important adults and peers and others who are able to speak life and to speak possibility into to young people.
Speaking of purpose and journey, I'm actually on this journey here where I'm a bivocational youth pastor. And I am not the only one. I know there's some of our listeners are bivocational just like me. And also some people are, you know, going through some changes in their own purpose journey, right? And some of us are just still trying to figure things out. So my question is, what advice can you give us as youth leaders, you know, as humans in this purpose journey?
I'm not certain if any of us are just bivocational, but often we are wearing lots of different hats at all times. Because, I mean, I think about it and, you know, there are different ways that, you know, especially in youth work, we often have different paid jobs, but there are always things, lots of things that you might be called to do, be it parenting, be it, you know, caring for others in our community and things like that, that are all part of our purpose and our calling. Oftentimes, I had to be able to name and take hold of my purpose, even if it wasn't the thing that I always got paid for. And often it was because I had to figure out, you know, and of course I'm, you know, I'm good Southern Black Christian. So I'm like, you know, your gifts are going to make a way for you. So we walked into that. But at the same time, I also was like, don't be afraid to pick up a job, you know, at place X or waiting tables or doing this other thing while we are also thinking about what is it that God has called me to do? Because actually, I don't devalue work. I love to work. And I think that we should honor the place and the role that work plays in our lives as we're always thinking about the way that we can use our work, our gifts, our love to serve God and to serve a wider community. Yeah.
I feel seen.
Yeah. And what I love about what you're sharing, Almeida, is that you're inviting us to think about purpose in a much more abundant way, that the one with the paycheck is not the one that has the most value, but all that we do, all that we do in response to our purpose is not going to be wasted. And what a reminder to all of us that there is no part of our story that God will waste in how we serve and love and accompany young people and the church and adults in general. And honestly, I'm thinking as a researcher, I mean, you are still tinkering with, you are still investigating. I mean, you were an engineer in the world of research when we were looking over the amazing work that you've done. I can now go, oh yeah, that is such an engineering mind. So detailed, so thorough, so thoughtful. And you strike me as somebody who is also a very gifted listener for the ways that you've set up research and the ways that you have provided resources out of them. And you've had very different spaces and spheres in which you've been able to listen as a professor, as a teacher, but also as a Sunday school teacher at your local church and in academia as a researcher and professor in the classroom. And young people, like anybody else, when we enter different spaces, we sometimes share and omit different parts of ourselves, depending on what the context is all about. And so as somebody who's had such a diverse amount of spaces to listen to young people, I would be so curious to hear from either your research or experiences, how have you seen young people think and ask questions about purpose?
So I love this question. And I also appreciate that you get me to kind of think about all these different hats that I've worn and all these different spheres in which I've worked with young people, because they are so important to teaching me about different things, but also to getting me to see different sides of young people. And even thinking about purpose, I think I want to share like two different examples from like these different contexts. So I spent a lot of time teaching middle school math and writing and reading and doing some remediation programs in the summer. But I remember this one young man, I'll call him Jay. Let's call him Jay. He helped me to think about purpose in lots of different ways, because he was one of those students for whom opportunities were not necessarily abundant. Talents were not obviously seen in him. He was a sassy, slick-talking person who really didn't have the supports throughout the school year from his family or from his community to really thrive in academic settings. However, I remember working with him over the summer. And of course, you know, when we've done summer school, we know we often get repeat travelers sometimes in summer school. And so I saw him a couple of summers. And so we got to build a relationship. But one of the things that I loved about him and what he was helping me to think about in terms of purpose is that he would often push me whenever I was trying to teach a math lesson or go back over fractions or go back over, you know, percentages or have them read particular things and learn phonics. And his question to me was, of course, what's the use of this? When am I ever going to need this? I can learn more about this. And we've had that discussion. And so he would push me to think about what's the purpose of this content. But what he was also really kind of talking about or helping us to wrestle with is that as adults, we often assume that young people know what they're going to do and how they're going to use the skills that we think that they have to have. For me, I had to kind of step back thinking that, okay, what I needed to give Jay was this sixth grade math curriculum. But what he needed was in that moment to make sure that what we were talking about was actually giving him the confidence and the life skills to kind of say, alrighty, I'm going to go and I'm going to think about how do I help out my little sister? Because that was his purpose at that moment. How do I look out for my mom? Because our housing is not stable and I feel like I have to be the man of the house already. And so there was a way that he was teaching me that he was already living into his purpose. So some of his priorities were different than the ones that I might have outlined as important for a sixth grader. But he was already, you know, wrestling with some of that. And how do we honor that as youth workers and to support young people like that? Because, I mean, we can, you know, preach to the wind and say the structure is bad and economics are terrible. But we also have to think about if someone like Jay presents themselves to us, how do we make sure we walk with them so that we can help him live into his purpose? Because I knew that I could not teach him anything about math or teach him anything about reading until I helped him to understand that your sister is safe while you're here, or your mom is going to be all right and you don't have to do this. Right now, you can focus on you and we'll make sure that they get the supports that they need.
Yeah. Yeah, I love that story because you're reminding us to not conflate purpose with career and that young people are living purposeful lives and purpose-filled lives now. I know you have another story to share with us, but that struck me from the first one.
So on the other end of the spectrum, you know, I always also have been privileged to work with these ridiculously resourced and talented young people in a different way. Like, you know, so in my other hat, like as a assistant director of the Youth Theological Initiative down at Emory, we would get the best and the brightest from these congregations. They would send us their best. And often I would also there encounter these young people who knew immediately that they wanted to and that their purpose and their calling was to change the world. The question was how and what they were going to do, like, you know, and I'm all for that. I love, by the way, you know, put me in a room with zealous, overzealous teenagers, and I am joyful. But one of the other stories that I remember thinking about in terms of how young people, listening with young people, really helped me to think about purpose and help and how they were talking about purpose was also another young woman. She was really pushing me also to kind of think about something you mentioned, Jennifer, in terms of really thinking about what her gifts and talents were now. Often one of the conversations that she had as a teenager was around, all right, this is what I think I'm called to do, and I want to help these people when I grow up, or when I finish my education, or when I go here. And it was interesting when as I was listening to that, I was like, does she understand the power she has right now? Does she understand the way that she might be able to have an impact on her family and her community right now? She did understand that, but there is a way often that she was following the script that her family and that often adults give her. The script for successful teenagers is wait. Wait in the wings, and once you've completed this, then you can be that. And often we want to, you know, in the Ericksonian language, we want to offer them this moratorium that they can, you know, have this waiting period, this time to grow and try on things. But sometimes we never tell them when the waiting stops. We never come back and say, you're ready. Your purpose, like walk into your purpose, walk into your calling. You have enough. And so, like, so on one end of the spectrum with Jay's story, we have a young man who was already feeling like, you know, living into these very adult kind of roles and not having the supports to do some of the skill building. On the other hand, we had a young woman who's talking and thinking about her purpose, but it's all future tense because she's not necessarily feeling empowered and called to really kind of act or think about what the teenage size actions and living into purpose might mean for her. Both of those were so important for me to think about in terms of what kind of accompaniment measures might be needed for our teenagers.
And now, here are Brad Griffin and Carol Powell, co-authors of our latest book, Three Big Questions That Change Every Teenager. They are here to answer one of our readers' questions about purpose.
Hey there, Brad. Hey, Kara, good to be back together.
For sure. So today we're reading a comment from Nancy Van Fleet, and here's what she posted. For me, an important part is the discussion revolving around the negative effects of helping others. I work with young adults who have poured so much of themselves into helping others that they're not only physically depleted, but also mentally and emotionally, just like Lily talked about in the book. Brad, what are your thoughts about Nancy's observation?
Kara, we heard this over and over and over. Almost every student we interviewed talked about helping as when they talked about purpose. Yeah. And in so many ways, that's a great answer. We're inspired by young people who want to help. And as a generation, we see activism and we see a lot of engagement. I see that, you know, in the teenagers that I work with in my church and the ones in my home. I always love it when they want to help and when they want to make a difference, you know, when they want to see things change. But helping in particular also has this shadow side, as Nancy brought up, that she is seeing in the young people in her life. If we only matter when we're helping, it can kind of cut out our need for rest. You know, what happens when we're overwhelmed and when these expectations just pile up and wear young people down? What would you say in response to that?
One of my concerns is that they don't have the right theological grounding undergirding that. And so that's why I love in the book that we really gave a Jesus-centered answer to the question of purpose, which is this: we make a difference because we're part of God's story. We're each part of God's story, and we need to figure out the part that God wants us to play in that story. And it's easy, especially as youth leaders, mentors, pastors, that we focus and we highlight young people when they're helping others. Like those are great stories to tell. And I want us to keep doing that. Like we don't need to stop doing that. But I would say, how can we elevate some other stories, not necessarily of, you know, youth group superstars or amazing community leaders, but more the everyday ways that young people are developing their identity, belonging, and purpose? You know, maybe a young person who's really developing the skills God has given them, not just related to helping others, but in music or drama or art or even their academic savvy. You know, I think one of the things that was interesting in the midst of all the discussion about Simone Biles and her journey in last summer's Olympics was when she posted on social media, "The outpouring love and support I've received has made me realize I'm more than my accomplishments and gymnastics, which I never truly believed before." I find that
was such a big moment.
Totally. And you know, I'm guessing most young people, including those in our youth ministries, can feel like their love, their affirmation is tied to what they do. And I just think, wouldn't it be great if the church was the first place that young people knew they were affirmed, not because of what they did, but just because of who they are?
That's such a great reminder.
I know some of my students also believe in certain causes, and they're like, for example, for ending homelessness. One of my questions is, you know, sometimes the purpose that they find is are kind of disconnected. In your book, The Spiritual Lives of Young African Americans, you actually wrote about that fragmented spirituality that young people experience. So can you talk a little bit about that? Can you talk to us a bit more about what that fragmentation looks like in young people's lives?
So fragmented spirituality is actually not a term that I coined. It's one that Evelyn Parker was beginning to develop in like the 1990s, looking at young people who probably are now, all of us are youth workers who were just like, she was studying us, you know. And so in some ways, it's a phenomenon that has continued through the 20th century into the early 21st century. And so this idea, though, of fragmented spirituality, not necessarily broken, but it's compartmentalized. Because fragmented spirituality is often a coping mechanism. And so oftentimes we fragment our spirituality, or we have, like, say, for example, as you were mentioning, our causes or our activism on one side and our understanding of faith or God or spirituality in another box. What I saw and what I observed in terms of fragmented spirituality is that you'll see young people who are the most, you know, in my theological like tradition, on fire for God, often don't bring that to their activism. And of course, for me, there was like, what do you mean? Bring the same fire here. But I think often it's because of the models that we were offering them as adults. But I think the other side of it now that I've seen is more young people who are super excited and energized about activism that don't actually know that there are any spiritual underpinnings, resources, strategies that also connect with what their activism is about. It was almost a like, oh, huh, interesting. Yeah, I never thought about that. And so it wasn't an antagonism, because sometimes we think that there's antagonism between activist spaces and spirituality. But for most of my youth, it was just a, oh, yeah, no, I never thought about that. Or I never would have even considered to put these things in conversation, which, of course, you know, made me think, us adults, we got some more to do. How do we create spaces, maybe in youth group, maybe on a mission trip, maybe at home, maybe around dinner, maybe in a line at a amusement park, to really help young people think about, all right, so here's what you're excited about, say, or here are the things that make you rise up and keep you up at night, or questions and concerns that you want to plug in. How do you think God is empowering you to do that? Or what do you think God is actually saying? And so to ask them to like to either search their scriptures or to search their practices or to search their tradition. Prime example, at young people who I was working with at YTI who were Catholic, who did not actually really pay attention to Catholic social teachings, and the fact that there was an entire tradition of Catholic social teachings that actually had something to say about, you know, what was going on in the world and how they might be able to respond and how the church and God was moving them to respond. And similarly, other young people who were of different, you know, one young woman was an apostolic and her theology had her in the community all the time for witnessing, but not necessarily thinking about how that connected with the fact that she also wanted to empower people in her community to be, you know, anti-poverty activist and anti-violence activist and things like that. They had this great sense of purpose. But to really think about it or to reflect on it theologically was where we needed to provide them an opportunity.
I think sometimes we fragment as well. We may not even have theology ourselves to know how to make sense of it. And we are in communities where adults might disagree with the ways younger generations are going about all these questions, right? And so what are things leaders can do to support our students as they are stepping in to their purpose that might lead us to places of social activism where we have not gone before?
Often for me, it's been really just kind of going where the students are already. It might be that I can give them a ride, I can show up, and it might have been a one-time thing, or it could have been like, this is my cause, like these are my people, I found it, and like, and trying to support them there. And then there's also the go where they are, but then it's also the encourage to bring another with. And so there's often, you know, one or two, particularly in a youth group, like the ones I've been working with or had worked with, there was one or two like leader, quote unquote, that were doing different things, but they weren't sure if they could kind of talk about it in youth group or invite other people. So really trying to say, all right, this is where you are. I saw what you were doing. That's awesome. How about we bring these others? And some of it, again, was really not just as to get them involved in that particular cause, but really to kind of let them see that youth group was a place that was an adaptive space, that was their space, that allowed their thoughts, their actions, their justice work to kind of be resourced. Even as youth leaders, sometimes we don't feel that we have the skill set to know how to make that shift or to be able to pivot in that particular way. And you don't have to. We don't have to. There's a whole lot of stuff, by the way, that I, justice-wise and theology-wise, that I don't know anything about. But really cultivating and modeling a teachable spirit were some of the things that were so helpful. You need to be co-researchers together. Sometimes you have to go out and you may not have the answers, and that is okay. But as the leader, you often will know different ways to go look for it, different people to talk to. Your network and their network might open up a door to say, well, wait a minute, if I don't know, you know what, I do remember I had this one friend, you know, who might know something. And that kind of work really is important for young people to see, but also important for us to constantly do as well as leaders, to know that we don't know it all. We don't have to know it all in order to be effective in supporting them.
So I have this student and his name is Jerry. And earlier I said that I'm a bivocational pastor, but I realize now I think I have a third job. It's a job coach. So Jerry, he asked like, hey, can you take a look at my resume? I was like, yeah, I'd gladly do that with you, Jerry. I asked him one of the most dreaded questions I get asked if I was in an interview. And that question is, where do you see yourself 5 years from now? Mm. Right? Mm. And his face changed from like a smile to like just like utter like sadness / shock. He doesn't really know what he wanted or where he wanted to go and things like that. And so he kind of got sad. What about students like Jerry, the ones that don't know, the ones that don't seem to be thinking about purpose, or the ones that like when it comes to purpose, that question kind of comes a little later than his friends? Or maybe they're just like struggling with getting by these days. Like what can I tell Jerry and other students like him?
No, I love that question, because we're always going to have some Jerrys, and throughout our lives, we're going to sometimes feel like the Jerry in the group, where it's like, well, everybody else seems to know and they have this all figured out and they've got their 12 point, you know, 5-year plan. And I just need to figure out what I'm going to have for lunch. You know, and, you know, there's some of that kind of stuff going on, but in terms of practically speaking, I think I always try to take the pressure down a little bit, because we have super pressured and anxious teenagers all the time, and they're getting that everywhere. And I mean, this is across the board, across like social classes and different ethnic communities. They're pressured. And so trying to figure out what does it mean for us to really say to young people, you're okay. Even if we cannot say, honestly, you have time, because sometimes they may not have time. They may have lots of things burdening them. But that you're going to be okay, and to be able to give them, again, just some space and a listening ear to really help support them or walk with them through. So what are some of the things that you are thinking about? Because often when Jerry is bringing that question to you, he is thinking about purpose, but he's feeling that his way of thinking about it isn't the way other people are thinking about it, or his answers to it might not, in the direction he's feeling called in, might not feel as developed or as affirmed or as clear as some other people. And so, you know, there's often nice, you know, guided meditations that I'll walk young people through. But one of my favorite to kind of like spark a question around purpose and vocation is, I love reading Howard Thurman's The Search for the Genuine. And in that, it's actually an excerpt from a graduation speech he was given at Morehouse or Spelman College. And in this Search for the Genuine, Thurman is really pushing people not to think about what job do you need to have or what, you know, college are you going to go to, but really, how are you going to listen to yourself, to slow many of the other voices and the perspectives and the stressors that are outside? And how are you going to center in enough for you to be able to actually hear the voice of the genuine? And some of us would also call the voice of the divine or the voice of God within you speaking. And he's like, because it's only when you hear that voice of the genuine are you able to make any of these other choices and kind of like decisions truly meaningfully. Because and that's the other thing, because I knew, as the person who a lot of people had said, you should be this, you should be that, I had listened to them, but I don't know that I had fully listened to what I initially wanted to go through. And I remember the transition from electrical engineering to teaching to ministry happened when I slowed down. I was a junior in college, done almost, actually pretty much done with my degree. And that was only the first time that I was like, all right, even though I'm good at this, I don't like this. What is it really that I am supposed to do? And of course, you know, my friends laughed at me. They're like, Almeda, you don't like machines. You like people way too much for you to be an engineer. And I was like, you are so right. Because the best thing that I ever did while I was studying at MIT was to start Saturday science clubs for the local kids. I think that's some of the stuff that we have to do in order to support some of the young people in our communities who may not be thinking about it, and to kind of remind them that it's okay, but it's also, can we quiet the chatter, the outside expectations, so that we can start having some of those conversations.
Yeah. And what a helpful reminder that sometimes I'm going to use I language here. I tend to want to give young people a linear process for their purpose because I myself feel the back and forth in mine.
Yep.
So my undergrad degree is in social work. I'm not doing anything close to social work these days. And
actually, no, you're doing it every day if you're working with young people.
I sometimes project that deep desire that I have for myself to students that are like, I don't know. And sometimes I don't give them the abundant, playful answer. I give them the rigid, fear-based scarcity model of like, no, you must make the, there is a right choice here. And if you don't make it,
world's gonna fall apart.
Yeah, like inappropriately add this pressure. Like if you get this wrong, the rest is done. And so I am just so encouraged, Almeda, that you preached grace, grace and grace and grace, that the same grace that God has had for us, God will have for our students.
And for me, often, even I think about like my own story, often I feel like it's more of the trajectory of a spiral of a football more than it is like, you know, a straight line. This is also why I love the power of narrative and story. Now, if you ask me to reflect on where I've been, I can see the points of connection and the fact that I needed to be an engineer so I could think about this critical thinking and the fact that engineering was applied science and all that I do right now as a practical theologian is applied theology. And so there's a way that I can tell that story after I've lived it, but while I'm living it, none of it makes sense. And so, and to be able to say to young people, I know you feel the pressure to get this right. But the truth of the matter is, before you are four awesome paths. Pick one, walk it, and if it doesn't work, come back. Or even for some people, you know, there are four not great choices about how you can struggle out of this situation, but you got to choose one. And that's some of the stuff that I think we, like, it's almost like we want it to be different than our own because we want better for our children. We want better for our teens. We want better for them. Instead of actually giving them the truth of our stories and the truth of our lives, which is, yeah, I had this plan, or I thought I knew what was going to happen, or I thought this person was the love of my life, or I thought, you know, that I, you know, I could make it as a singer. And I tried it and I stepped out on faith and faith took me back to being a barista, or, you know, took me back to, you know, doing this particular thing.
Well, friends, this season, we want to leave you with some final words of encouragement from each of our guests and hosts. Today, I want to start with when we examine purpose, we need to look at it in different perspectives. Just like earlier, sometimes it's looking through sociological lens, psychological lens, and theological lens. And I'm so encouraged also just by this conversation, Almeda and Jen, and hearing from your perspectives, your different perspectives, and how that has, you know, kind of helped shape my own sense of purpose as a youth and college pastor, and how I can better myself in helping shape my students. So thank you. How about you, Jen?
Well, my encouragement to y'all is something that I'm going to be thinking about for a little bit, which is how can we constantly combat the myth that purpose
has an arrival point and it is career bound, but rather that purpose is a constant creative dance with God's abundant invitation to join what God is doing in the world, and that we can't quite mess it up as much as we fear that we have so much power to mess it up for God. God is far greater than our biggest fear. And so we'll just encourage you, whether you need to sit down for a little bit as a youth leader or pastor or parent, whoever you are in your journey of purpose, and say, you know, what are the things that I need to have some more creativity and abundance around so that I could then provide that creative, abundant, and safe place for students to react and play with what it means to join in with what God is doing in the world. So that's my encouragement to you. Almeda, would you close us in our time of encouragements?
Well, just gratitude. And I think I've been so encouraged by the conversation. And so the only thing I would probably add to this in terms of encouragement is that just to be reminded that in our work as youth pastors and youth workers and researchers and teachers and parents is to really be okay with sharing from the totality of our journeys, to be okay sharing from our struggles, our securities, our insecurities, our vulnerabilities, the places where we got it right, the places where we messed it up. Because I think young people really need to also be encouraged. They don't need to know all our business, but they need to be encouraged by the ups and downs, the highs and lows, and the different ways that we are walking into our purpose and our calling, so that, just to connect with both of you, so that we're not perpetuating that mythology that purpose is one thing that we figure out one time and it's done forever, instead of really thinking about the fact that it is ongoing daily work, and we recommit to our purpose and we recommit to our calling as we continue to live.
Oh, that was beautiful. Thank you so much. That was really rich.
Thank you.
Well, Reverend Dr. Almeda Wright, we are so grateful for your time here today, your wisdom, your experience, your expertise, and we hope that whoever was able to listen to us today, we thank you for your time and for always tuning in to our conversations here at the FYI on Youth Ministry.
Goodbye.
Bye, everyone.
Bye-bye.
Did you know that this episode is just one of the many free resources produced by the Fuller Youth Institute? To learn more about any of the topics we discussed today or any other youth ministry topic, you can check out our books and training at fulleryouthinstitute.org. And a special thanks to our teens, Isaac, Dania, Ava, and Wyatt.
When I was younger, I would say I wanted to be a teacher. But then I wanted to go to the army, I guess. And then, well, now I want to be a doctor. But then I also wanted to start my own daycare business.
I was in a production of Junie B. Jones. When I was stepping on stage in front of like a live audience for the first time, singing my heart out in front of everyone, I was like, yes, this is what I was meant to do. Like in this moment, this is like perfect.
At first, I thought that I wasn't good at anything, that I was pretty much useless because I was scrawny. And now I feel like I'm getting there. I want to work as an auto mechanic, something in the auto mechanic industry or like math. I'm still not sure.
It's hard to figure out what you want to do for the rest of your life when you're a teenager.